The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're broadcasting live once again on a chilly afternoon here at Ed Stone. This will be our last live broadcast from Ed Stone for a while. We'll be broadcasting live across the pond from Edmond for the next 3 or 4 months. So I'll go from an afternoon program to an early morning program. Always an adjustment, but a fun one at that. So we'll look forward to coming to you again from Edmond on Friday morning's show, or Friday afternoon, or Friday evening, wherever it is that you, whenever it is that you happen to listen to the program on today's show. Hopefully, at the end, we'll be able to get to a few emails that have come in recent days, and then with respect to some news items that I want to touch on today, I'd like to just weave it together with more of a Bible study that springs from the second chapter of Mystery of the Ages, the mystery of angels and evil spirits. We heard a message over the weekend by Fred Dadalo. He was talking about God's Holy Spirit and showing that we have to grow in the grace and the knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And he referred back to Mr. Armstrong's final Pentecost sermon, the one where he said that most of God's people just weren't getting the message. They weren't getting it. And Mr. Armstrong, in that final message, said, I'm going to do everything I can today to try to help you get this, to understand this, but I still think you're not going to get it. He said even the ministers were failing to get across this message of why we're here, of why God brings us into the church, of what we're here to do. If you think about that critical year, 1985, and the lead up to it, Mr. Armstrong, of course, he finished work on Mystery of the Ages in that final year of his life, and he said what impelled him to write the book was that he was coming to more deeply understand that this world is cut off from God. And you can go right back to Genesis 3 and see when it happened. God offering the tree of life to Adam and Eve, but they rejected it. When they accepted the government, essentially, of Satan the devil. And so God cut them off from the tree of life and sent them forth from the Garden of Eden. The whole world is cut off from God. Satan has deceived the whole world. This understanding is what really motivated Mr. Armstrong to write Mystery of the Ages. The last booklet that he wrote, again, right around the same time, it was titled A World Held Captive, Held Captive to the Devil. If you read through, well, it's true of any chapter in Mystery of the Ages, but if you read through chapter 2, The Mystery of Angels and Evil Spirits, you're just really left in a state of astonishment when you think about how much God has revealed to his true church, the understanding, the truth that we know, the revelation that we've been given. And it's so foundational with respect to that chapter, chapter 2. We've talked quite a lot in recent weeks, months, even the last couple, 3 years. We've talked a lot about Revelation 12 and Satan deceiving the whole world and how that Satan and his demons are confined to this earth. But go back to chapter 2 of Mystery of the Ages, what was written back in 1985, over 30 years ago, and you have the foundational knowledge the foundational revelation, Satan and his demons, it's a great mystery to the world, but it's not to those of us in God's church. 2 Corinthians 4, in verse 3, it says, "But if our gospel be hid, it is hid to them that are lost, in whom the God of this world has blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is in the image of God, should shine unto them." This is not God's world. It's the devil's world. He's called the prince of this world in John 14. And here he's referred to as this world's God. The God of this world. It's this God that has deceived the entire world. And so, as we've said before, if you're watching world events, if you're looking at what's happening to this world, you see the devil's fingerprints everywhere. You see a lot of evidence of his existence. Look at the relentless attack, just to take one example here, the relentless attack on the U.S. presidency, all four of these investigations, years and years, the Department of Justice, the FBI, the House, the Senate, counterintelligence investigation, the Mueller report, the Mueller probe. Every single time, no collusion, as the president repeatedly says. No obstruction, no underlying crime, nothing. And yet, his enemies, they won't let go. They want to destroy him. They want to destroy the presidency. They want to retain power or grab hold of it. They want it back. They want control of the White House. They want to control Congress. They want to control the courts. And so they're doing everything, anything and everything they can to destroy, to divide and conquer. And they're colluding along the way. They're colluding with the media. Listen to this media montage. These are media members, most of them talking to Democrats. And on both sides, they're salivating over the thought of putting this president in prison. In prison. Clip one.
He wants to see the president of the United States in prison. It's an extraordinary statement from the Speaker of the House. Do you agree with her?
Is that how you see it? Do you want to see the president in prison instead of impeaching him?
So what was your reaction when you heard Speaker Pelosi reportedly saying that she wants to see President Trump in prison?
Look, I don't have any difficulty with those words.
But here's the question. Would you like to see President Trump in prison?
Do you think President Trump committed crimes that could be prosecuted?
He did.
When Nancy Pelosi says she wants to see the President of the United States in prison, is that at all realistic?
You know, I think it could be realistic.
No one is above the law, and that includes President Trump.
If it determines that we lead to impeachment, or if he ends up in jail, so be it.
Now, Bob Mueller almost said that he should be in jail.
If you become president in 2020, would you want your Justice Department to pursue charges against President Trump?
Do you want to see President Trump in prison? Well, let me press you, Congressman. Do you want to see the President of the United States in jail?
More than anything else, Wolf, look, the lizard brain that I have says I hope bad things happen to this man because he has been so destructive.
It never ends. It won't end from here on out. It's leading to civil war. And that's what so many want. Divide and conquer. Never mind the four separate investigations. Never mind what the Mueller report says. Just ignore it or change it. Say that the Mueller report, actually, say that the Mueller report proves he's guilty. He obstructed justice. He did this. He did that. No underlying crime. And so every day, every single day, the president's got to come out there and defend himself. This is the only story that matters to the mainstream media. This is all that they care about. You look at this world, as I say, and you see Satan's fingerprints all over it. You see a world besieged with problems and troubles, and they just keep getting worse. We'll come to that in just a second. But in the minds of the American media, this is the only story that matters. Which is why every day the president has to come out and say things like this. This is clip five.
You can't impeach somebody when there's never been anything done wrong. We have a no collusion. We have no anything. There's no obstruction. There's no collusion. There's no anything. When you look at past impeachments, whether it was President Clinton or I guess President Nixon never got there. He left. I don't leave. There's a big difference. I don't leave. We did nothing wrong except create the greatest economy in the history of our country. We did nothing wrong except rebuild our military like nobody's ever seen before. We're doing a great job. Our country's never been stronger.
Now, again, there's some exaggeration there at the end, but it is true. There's been a resurgence. And he has to repeatedly say, no collusion, no anything. If you want impeachment, look at history. But then he talks about the economy and the resurgence, basically. And that, too, as we've said over and again, that's prophesied. The Jeroboam administration, God having mercy on our people, our nations. That's in 2 Kings 14, 25 through 27. Look at how merciful and loving God is. Even despite all of our problems and troubles and sins, God still, he still has mercy. He sees the affliction of our people. It's very bitter. And he's intervened. He intervened so that we wouldn't be blotted out. Our name wouldn't be blotted out. From under heaven. That's what it says in 2 Kings 14. And so we have one last opportunity to turn to God. Really, as I said on yesterday's show, it's all for the work. God has, he's given us this resurgence so the work can be finished. So that we can complete the tasks at hand. So that we can do the work of our Father and Jesus Christ. But the enemies, they are relentlessly assaulting this presidency, and they're bringing down the nation as they do it. Listen to this this Democrat. This is from the House of Representatives, and what she said about Donald Trump, or more specifically about Mr. Trump's supporters, clip two.
It is glaringly apparent that many who support the president administration are either racist, steeped in racist religious beliefs, ignorant, or as my mother used to say, just plain dumb.
Interesting that she throws in there steeped in religious beliefs. Of course, you hear the charges of racism and all that. Here they're dumb, you know, and on and on. But the fact that this is in the House of Representatives, this is a Democrat representative from Ohio, using her speech time to call the President Trump supporters racist, religious, ignorant, or dumb. Where does this come from? This kind of mental derangement. Who's behind it? We read 2 Corinthians 4. In Ephesians 6, this is the chapter about the armor of God. Put on the whole armor of God. Be strong in the power of his might, Paul says. We need the armor to be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Notice verse 12, it says, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." Here are our enemies. Human nature. It's aggravated and exploited by demons. Satan is responsible for far more than we realize. In Mystery of the Ages, it says, the fact that holy angels and evil spirits are invisible does not negate their existence. In truth, the invisible spirit world is more real than the material and the visible. It's more real than the material world because the material world came from the spiritual realm. Just because we can't see them, as Mr. Armstrong brings out in Chapter 2 of Mystery of the Ages, it doesn't negate their existence or their power. Verse 13, this is in Ephesians 6, it says, "Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand." It tells us about our approach as Christians, the fact that we've got to go forward. Don't give up ground. Stand firm. Be a pillar. Be immovable. We're in a life and death struggle, a battle, a war of the wills, as it says in Romans 7. Just back up a few pages to Ephesians 2. Paul has a lot to say about the spiritual realm in the book of Ephesians. He has a lot to say about the mystery of Satan and evil spirits. It's a great mystery to this world, but not to those of us in God's church. Not if you've read Mystery of the Ages. Not if you understand chapter 2. The mystery of angels and evil spirits. Verse 2 of Ephesians 2, it says, "Wherein in time past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience." As I say, Satan and his demons, they're far more responsible for what we see happening on earth today than we realize. He is a master broadcaster, Satan the devil. He's described here as the prince of the power of the air. He's broadcasting, as Mr. Armstrong wrote, not in words, sounds, or pictures, but in attitudes, moods, impulses. He says in chapter 2, Satan moves on the human spirit within people to move them in attitudes of envy, jealousy, resentment, impatience, anger, bitterness, and strife. People have no realization of the tremendous power of Satan. They have no idea how much Satan is influencing them. Listen to the things they're saying in the major media. Listen to things they're saying on the floor of the House of Representatives. What's behind this? It says here, the human spirit within each human is automatically tuned to Satan's wavelength. It seems as if Satan has surcharged the air over the entire earth with his attitude of self-centeredness and vanity. It's just everywhere. He's surcharged the air, which is why it's so important for us to plug in each day to God's wavelength through prayer, through Bible study and fasting and so on, Christian fellowship. That's why we have to be grounded. These tools, they're our lifeline, prayer and Bible study, fellowship, fasting. And we've got to be vigilant. We've got to resist against these influences, as it says in James 4 and also 1 Peter. We'll cover some of those verses a little bit later. We've got to be vigilant ourselves and in our homes and with our children. There was a news item in the stack today. We've talked before about this video game, Fortnite, and what was a real eye-opener in looking at some of the statistics in this article is just how young these children get started in these kinds of addictive video games. The article said that from 10 to 12 years old, they're playing it regularly, habitually. We often concentrate on this at our youth camps in the summer, or at least warn against it to try to help our teenagers. But they come to PYC when they're 13, 14, 15. And in some cases, if they just go along according to the ways of this world, they could come to camp and already be addicted. Wasting time. The article brings out how that it's not so much social media for these youngsters as it is social gaming. Just nonstop games on their phones, on their devices. And it's more than 50%, I think it is. 53% of 10 to 12-year-olds play the game weekly, Fortnite. There's a lot of pressure at school from other friends. If everyone's doing it, well, we've got to do it too. And these habits, they spread. And you look at the devil behind it all, and he's just devouring. He's devouring people's time and their energy and their routine. Everything revolves around activities and things that he has influenced, Satan and his demons. Verse 2 says, the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience. Parents have to be vigilant, on guard. Verse 3 says, among whom all of us lived, we as well as you, this is in Moffat, when we obeyed the passions of our flesh, carrying out the dictates of the flesh and its impulses, when we were objects of God's anger by nature, like the rest of men, we were all a part of this. We all came out of this world and into God's church. And so in God's church, you have God's government, you have God's work. These are the things that we revolve our lives around. And then, of course, you see in this world, everything's just breaking down and falling apart because of these verses, because of Satan and his demons, because of the course of this world, because of the prince of the power of the air. This really does strike right at the heart and core of why the church is here. It's because it's the beginning of a new world. It's the start of something new that's going to spread over the earth. The cities of this world, it all needs to be redone. We need something entirely different, something brand new. It's not going to be a simple repair job. It's a matter of starting anew with God's civilization, with God's family government. There's just been story after story about cities on the West Coast. You've heard them before on this program. The homelessness in Seattle and in San Francisco, Los Angeles. There's this movement gaining some momentum in L.A. from this. I think she's a blogger, but she's basically started a petition to get the L.A. mayor fired. Eric Garcetti, I think, is his name. Because the city's just falling apart and homelessness is just exploding in that city. And it's the same, as I say, in San Francisco and Seattle. Liberal bastions. These are cities that have been governed by Democrats for decades. And they're falling apart. And Democrats don't care about it. Because all of those areas vote Democrat anyway. So why bother? Why worry about it? Let's just attack the president. Impeach, impeach, impeach. Let's just focus on that. And forget about our cities that are just falling apart. This gal that's starting this petition, she recently had this to say on I think this is a morning radio show in Southern California, clip 3.
Well, I've just had enough. You know, I'm a citizen of Los Angeles. I live in the Byzantine Latino quarters down here on Normandy and 15th Street behind Loyola High School. And I've lived here for the past 4 years, and I see that I can't walk the streets at night. I work downtown L.A. I work for law firms downtown, prominent law firms. I can't walk to lunch without seeing a homeless person with blood on their shirt or scabs all over them or attacking coworkers. A woman took the elevator ride up to the 14th floor where I worked and was using the elevator as a bathroom. Everybody comes into my office sick who takes public transportation. I've had a situation where I've worked in a law office where a woman took public transportation bringing bed bugs into my office.
Oh.
I mean, listen, it is not safe in L.A. The sanitation, it's not safe. We need more than 350,000 signatures to qualify a petition to recall the mayor of Los Angeles. He was barely elected, and he took an oath to do no harm. And we have a 9/11 type catastrophe growing here in Los Angeles.
A 9/11 type catastrophe. Homelessness in Los Angeles, it's up 16% from 2018. That's just last year. 16%. There's a columnist at the LA Times, again, a liberal paper. But he too is attacking the mayor of Los Angeles because of the homelessness crisis. And there's just trash, garbage all over the streets, syringes, illegal aliens, people sleeping on street corners. This LA columnist, he's lambasted the city officials, the city leaders, for, it says here, according to Fox News, for spending $600 million to tackle the spread of homeless encampments across the city, only to see the total number of homeless rise 16% to around 60,000 people, according to the latest count. 60,000, that's a mid-level sized city. A medium-sized city within the city of Los Angeles, 60,000 homelessness or homeless people in Los Angeles. It's going up 15, 16% year by year. San Francisco, Seattle. Why is this happening? Why is it getting worse? Well, you have to go back to the second chapter of Mystery of the Ages. The mystery of Satan and the evil spirits, or the mystery of the spiritual realm. God, of course, created the spiritual realm. He's the one who made Lucifer and the angels. And we can turn to the Bible once again and understand and know what happened. Ezekiel 28. Verse 11, it says, "Moreover, the word of the Eternal came unto me, saying, Son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyrus, and say unto him, Thus says the Eternal God, You seal up the sum, full of wisdom, and perfect in beauty. This is the prince that God made." Well, it talks about a human leader first in the chapter, and then it transitions into the one who became the prince of the power of the air, Lucifer. Verse 13, it says, "You have been in Eden, the garden of God. The workmanship of your tabrets and of your pipes was prepared in you in the day that you were created." So he was a created being, Lucifer. All of the angels created by God. Verse 14, "You are the anointed cherub that covers, and I have set you so. You are upon the holy mountain of God. You have walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire." He was trained right at the throne of God and then assigned to responsibilities on earth. It mentions the holy mountain of God. It mentions Eden, the garden of God, in verse 13. Verse 15 says, "You were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created until iniquity was found in you." He was perfect until iniquity or lawlessness was found in him. Here was this brilliant being, this supreme masterpiece of God's creative power. And yet he didn't build the character of God. He rebelled against the government of God. He turned to lawlessness and sin. And that's been the cause of all the problems we see in the world today. Sin originated in Lucifer. Violence, as it says in the next verse, it originated in Lucifer. Destruction, competition, misery, unhappiness. All of it started here. This covering cherub. Verse 16 says, "By the multitude of your merchandise, they have filled the midst of you with violence. And you have sinned," it says. Where did it start? How did it start? Verse 17 says, "Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You have corrupted your wisdom by reason of your brightness." It says, I will cast you to the ground. I will lay you before kings, and so on. But it started with his heart being lifted up. It started with vanity. The parallel passage in Isaiah 14, or the companion passage, says in verse 12, how are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How are you cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? How did this happen? It says in verse 13, Isaiah 14, 13, for you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. It all started with vanity. Challenging God, defiantly going against God and his authority, his rule. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds, it says. I will be like the Most High. Yet you shall be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. Listen to what Mr. Armstrong says. This is in Mystery of the Ages, again, chapter 2. It says, when Lucifer allowed thoughts of vanity, jealousy, envy, lust, and greed, then resentment and rebellion to enter and occupy his mind, something happened to his mind. His mind became perverted, distorted, twisted. His thinking became warped. God gave him and the angels control over their own minds. They can never straighten them out, never again think rationally, honestly, rightly. This is why there's so much derangement in the world today. This is why people can't think straight. This is why they become obsessed over things, obsessed over crimes that aren't there. Who cares about evidence and facts? Just destroy, just conquer, just divide. That spirit's coming from the devil. Vanity, and there's lots of it, that comes from the devil. Puffed up. It seems neither side of the political spectrum can get enough of vanity and self-righteousness. There was a bit yesterday, I forget where this was, with the vice president, or the former vice president, Joe Biden. He's now running for president, but he told his friends in the media, we're going to really tear down Donald Trump in this speech. And so most of the speech is an attack on the Trump presidency. But then this one, you know, a real head shaker, where he talks about, you know, what he intends to do. It made me think of that article at the Trumpet. I forget what the title was, but basically this is going back to when he ran for president in 2008, and it was Joe Biden boasting about all the problems of the world he was going to solve. And he kind of followed on that theme in yesterday's speech as well. This is clip 4.
That's why I've worked so hard in my career to make sure that I promise you, if I'm elected president, you're going to see the single most important thing that changes America is we're going to cure cancer. You think I'm... But that's another issue.
Excuse me. He's going to cure cancer. He had 8 years there with the Obama administration. I'm not sure how far along he got into that plan. And then to think about all of the associated costs to try to cure cancer, to try to fix these problems. And that's always the strategy. We've just got to raise taxes and throw more money at it. Theresa May, she's on her way out, and she wants to spend $1 trillion to try to make the UK carbon neutral by 2020. $1 trillion. There was, I think, 3 or 4 stories in the news stack that Richard gave me yesterday. Stories that were debunking global warming. And yet here is the leader of the UK, the outgoing leader. And she wants to saddle the United Kingdom with one final policy, destructive policy at that. And to saddle her nation with that kind of astronomical debt. And then you look around the world and you see all of the upsets in weather-related disasters in the Midwest, America's farmers, and of course it's truly a global phenomenon. We're going to get more into this, I think, on Friday's show. But troubles everywhere that you look, and we really haven't even looked at. Nations rising against nations. That's coming too. Russia and China, for example. More and more stories talking about these two. Strengthening their alliance. There's massive protests in Hong Kong. They're out on the streets because they're losing their freedoms. China's just imposing its will on this once prosperous province. This once prosperous British province. And so they're taking to the street. I think it's like, well, what, 10, 15% of the entire country? The whole city, they're turning out in droves because they're upset, like so many others are in this world today. There's a spirit behind all of these developments, all of these events. Mr. Armstrong says in Mystery of the Ages, think of all the supreme talent, ability, and potential in a being created with such capacities. He's speaking of Lucifer, and he says, and all perverted, all gone sour, all dissipated, turned to hatred, destruction, hopelessness. It says, yet take courage, the awesome human potential, if we care enough about it to resist Satan's wiles and evils and discouragements, and to persevere in God's way is infinitely superior and higher than Lucifer's, even as created before he turned to rebellion and iniquity. Amid all of this destructiveness, this hopelessness, this hatred, this violence, Mr. Armstrong says in that same chapter, chapter 2, take courage. Take courage. Concentrate on the awesome power at our disposal, the incredible human potential. If we care enough to resist against Satan's broadcast, there's real power, godly power, at our disposal. Peter said in 1 Peter 5:8, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. He is looking to devour you. But Mr. Armstrong says, take courage. Your Bible says, if you're vigilant, if you stand firm against this influence, against this demon army, verse 9 says, whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. Stand fast, resist steadfast, or stand against, Ephesians 6 says. James 4 says, resist the devil. He says, if we do that, he'll flee from us. Actually, I should read the whole verse. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. So it starts with submission to God. Submit to our Father in heaven, and then resist against the devil. And the devil will flee. James continues in verse 8, draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. That's the strategy. That's the battle plan. Drawing near to God, submitting ourselves to God, and then resisting against the devil. There's so many examples in the Old Testament and the New of God and even his angelic realm fighting for us. Not all of the angels turn to sin. There's righteous angels, and they outnumber the demons by a count of 2 to 1. You have God the Father, Jesus Christ, our Lord. You have the holy angels. I guess I can just take the time to read one example. This is from 2 Kings 6. In verse 8 it says, and the king of Aram was fighting Israel. He planned with his officers to lay an ambush at a certain spot. But the man of God, that's speaking of Elisha, the man of God sent warning to the king of Israel not to pass that spot because the Arameans were lying hidden there. So Elisha warned Israel's king about this Syrian ambush. And verse 10 says, so the king of Israel, sending to the spot about which the man of God had warned him, saved himself. This happened more than once. It greatly upset the mind of the king of Aram. He summoned his officers and asked them, Can you not show me who is betraying us to the king of Israel? None of us, my lord king, said an officer. It is Elisha the prophet in Israel. He tells the king of Israel the very words you breathe in your bedchamber. That's from the Moffat translation. But you can see how this Gentile king, this king of Syria, he was filled with wrath because God's prophet was tipping off the king of Israel. Verse 13 says, and he said, go and spy where he is that I may send and fetch him. And it was told him, saying, behold, he is in Dothan. Therefore sent he there horses and chariots and a great host. And they came by night and they compassed the city about. So here comes the Syrian army. They're looking for Elisha. They want to find and kill God's prophet. Here comes the Syrian army surrounding the city of Dothan. Verse 15, and when the servant of the man of God was risen early and gone forth, behold, an host compassed the city, both with horses and chariots. And his servant said to him, alas, my master, how shall we do? What are we going to do? We're surrounded. And how did Elisha respond to this? How should we respond if we're surrounded or if it seems like we're besieged, facing insurmountable problems? Well, verse 16, it says, and he answered, fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them. God's prophet said, listen, this was one of his students panicking, asking, what are we going to do? And God's prophet said, listen, there's more on our side. That Syrian king, that Syrian army, they're the ones who should be worried. They're the ones who should be quaking in their boots. They're the ones outnumbered. Verse 17, and Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray you, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha. Elisha prayed that this student could see what he knew is there all the time. He had an army of angels to defend him, to overpower this enemy. And when we realize this, it truly does free us from a lot of anxiety. It will strengthen our faith. It's going to take faith to survive. But look, there's all kinds of power at our disposal. Draw near to God. Submit yourselves to God and resist the devil. And then he'll flee. His army will flee. Verse 18 says, and when they came down to him, Elisha prayed unto the Eternal and said, smite this people, I pray you, with blindness. And he smote them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. So these Syrian soldiers, they're blinded. And then Elisha led them back to Israel as captives. Just an unbelievable sequence of events. My father wrote in the former prophet's book, he said, this is how God has always protected his obedient family. It's a prophecy. He's referring to this incident, this account. It's a prophecy of how God protects his Elijah work today. That's why Mr. Armstrong did such a towering work in spite of his many enemies. This is the reason God's Philadelphia Church of God today does such a powerful work with only a tiny group of people. See, it's a small and scattered group, as I said yesterday. But there's an angelic host. God is here with us. God's army is bigger than our enemy's army. We just have to see. We have to have our eyes opened, just like this student. Elisha prayed for him, and his eyes were open to the truth. We outnumber the enemy. We do. In Mystery of the Ages, Mr. Armstrong says, the good news is God's purpose through mankind and the fact that the two-thirds of the angels who are holy and righteous outnumber the demons and remain as God's invisible agents to minister to and help in the righteous character development of the myriad of humans who shall yet become the sons and heirs of the supreme God and members of the great God family. You can read about these righteous angels in many scriptures. Hebrews 1 refers to them as being God's servants. They're referred to in Psalm 91. Matthew 18 and verse 10 also, there's a reference there. But above all, I mean, well, it's not above the Bible in importance, but as far as the content, you can read all about it in chapter 2 of Mystery of the Ages. The mystery of angels and evil spirits. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a few emails coming from you listeners. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Could anything be more mysterious than the question of the unseen spirit world? Angelic beings have always been a mystery to people on the earth. Do angels actually exist? Is there, in fact, a Satan, the devil? Is Satan a literal, immortal being? Did God create a devil? To understand more about the mystery of angels and evil spirits, be sure to request Herbert W. Armstrong's masterful work, Mystery of the Ages. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
And we're getting a pretty good response from our live stream on YouTube. What's interesting, most of these are just really short messages, but it just points out where people are listening in from. South Wales, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It says here, 70s for highs today and tomorrow, almost unheard of for mid-June, Oklahoma. We're loving it. So we got a weather update. It's a little chillier here. Another one says, good morning, Richard Parker and Mr. S. Fleury. So they know I'm here. That's obvious. But they also know who's in the studio, of all things. So hopefully, well, that's not too creepy, is it? There's someone who's in the know. Another one from Indiana, Virginia. Love the book, Mystery of the Ages, says another one. Here's one again from YouTube just now. Love the Bible study this morning. It's exactly what I needed to get a little more hope other than all this world's negativity. Another one writes, awesome scriptures. Men of faith, just like Mr. Armstrong. Another one says, so much power if we can just kneel and access it the way Mr. Armstrong did. And then one last one here. Says the trumpet crew is awesome. So we appreciate that feedback, that live action feedback that we're getting on YouTube during today's show. These are a few emails that have come in over the last few days. It says, thank you for this message. It made me realize, or re-realize, he says, that every day is obedience to God in order to perfect his character within us. May God bless this work. And his work will be done. That's coming from West Australia. Another one here says, it was great fun to hear our French and Dutch brethren on Monday's program. I'm so thankful for their dedication to God's work. I truly enjoyed all the pictures on Twitter sent out from the Imperial students' trip to Washington, D.C. My friends and I, back in the 1960s, took trips almost every weekend to see the sights in the nation's capital. So many of these places that the students enjoyed going to see recently. Then soon after my husband proposed to me, he took me into D.C. to see the Mona Lisa. The nation of France had lent the Mona Lisa painting to the USA's National Gallery in 1963. We, like you, stood in a long line, finally, to view her famous smile for a few seconds, and then moved on. She writes, I now have, for many years, a production, or reproduction rather, of the Mona Lisa next to my computer as a good reminder of that day so many years ago. It was around that same time that we began receiving Mr. Armstrong's booklets and The Plain Truth, which led to both of us taking the correspondence course even before we were married in August of that same year. It was such a miracle that God brought us together and called us together, since I was a hillbilly from Tennessee and he was a Yankee from New Jersey. We met after both of us had moved to the same little town in Maryland to take jobs. I know God planned it all out. How else would we have ever met? She says finally, I love to listen to the Trumpet Daily. I hope to see you when you come to New York for the PAC at the end of June. Another one here says, my wife and I would like to pass on that we listened to Friday's show on the drive home from Pentecost, and we really enjoyed it. We really liked the audio journal format, as it provided on-the-ground firsthand reporting of your experiences in Portsmouth, crossing the channel, and Utah Beach. It was also great to hear comments from the AC students and your family with you on the trip, as well as from the D-Day veteran. If possible, we'd love to see more of these audio journal shows recorded in the future as you embark on different trips. We also wanted to say that what you covered on Friday's show really inspired us to take action. We'll be keeping the feast in Edstone this year and are currently planning which places in the UK we want to visit. After listening to your vivid description of touring the HMS Victory in Portsmouth, we decided it definitely was a must-see. Finally, we wanted to give a friendly shout-out to our French brethren that we look forward to meeting them at the feast in Edstone this fall. Many thanks to you and your staff for all their hard work and long hours spent preparing and producing these programs. So that comes in from Canada. And one last one here from Indiana. It says, thank you for sharing your recent travels with us through the TD program. It is most appreciated as it keeps us in tune with God's wonderful work in Europe as well. It was heartwarming to hear the voices and comments of our dear brethren from France and various parts of Europe. It reinforces in our minds that we are all begotten by our Heavenly Father and unified by His one Spirit. And through His Son, Jesus Christ, living in us, we are here to do our Father's business, this great work of God. Thank you again. And that comes in from Indiana. So we thank you for your comments, and we'll look forward to giving you more of them at a future time. Well, that's it for today's show. Richard will be subbing in tomorrow, and then I'll be broadcasting again live from Edmond, assuming everything goes well with the travel day tomorrow. I'll be broadcasting live on Friday's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.